Welcome to Torah Smash, the podcast for nerdy Jews, where our lives of Jewish learning collide with our love of nerd culture. In each episode, we discuss what we lovingly call a Torah Smash, which we have defined as a beautiful collision of one thing from the world of Judaism with another from nerd culture. I'm Ethan Lane Miller, and joining me today are
Barak Malkin,
RDY,
Dr. Miriam Mora.
Our guest for today's episode is Dr. Miriam Mora. Miriam earned her PhD in American Ethnic and Immigration History, her master's in Holocaust and Genocide Studies, and her undergrad in Fine Arts Photography. She was raised conservative and after training for her bat mitzvah, was planning to become a rabbi. She almost went to rabbinical school after her master's as well, but she decided to go into history instead. Miriam is currently the director of programs at the Center for Jewish History in Manhattan and still teaches in the CUNY and SUNY system to keep her teaching muscles alive. Miriam is a Star Trek fan, an avid comics reader, sci-fi lover, and all-around deep-diving nerd. She published a chapter in a recent anthology on the Jewishness of the Ferengi in the Star Trek universe and is also planning a new research project on Jews in comics. She is also the co-creator of JUICE, the Jewish Comics Experience. The Center for Jewish History just announced the exhibit related to JUICE, and it's Miriam's first time curating. So that's pretty fun and exciting, too. Welcome, Miriam.
Yay, welcome.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
We're so excited to have you here.
This is my first guest podcast, so I'm very excited to be here, too.
Oh, well, Shehianu moment.
Hopefully it will not be the last. This is the first of many.
May our dozens of listeners recommend you for other podcasts.
Well, so Miriam, that was a great introduction. So I think we'll go ahead and we'll jump into the episode and see if RDY and Barak can guess what our topic is going to be. So Star Trek is about exploring strange new worlds and seeking out new life and civilizations. Gene Roddenberry saw Star Trek as an allegory and oftentimes used alien species to serve as stand-ins for modern-day issues in society. Through using alien species as a way to touch on divisive topics, Star Trek has covered racism, the HIV and AIDS epidemic, and issues of gender and sexuality. There have been so many episodes of Star Trek that you could say that it's not hard to look at Star Trek and find yourself. So, my dear co-hosts, what might be the topic of today's episode of Torah Smash?
It's so Ethan, that introduction. Here's a general and vague thing about
Star Trek.
The thing that I find myself in is the Torah, period. But I think that might be just as vague as your answer.
No, you said find yourself. So I'm thinking something like Jewish identity.
So it's all right there in Miriam's biography. Published a chapter in a recent anthology on the Jewishness of the Ferengi in the Star Trek universe. So today we are going to explore different alien races and species in Star Trek. And we're going to answer the most important question. Are they? Or are they not Jewish?
Oh, super
fun. Space Jew question.
Jews in space.
Question mark?
Yes, question mark.
Is this going to be like the Josh Fixler episode where it's Golem or not Golem?
A little bit, yeah.
Sweet. Hi, Josh.
Shout out to Josh Fixler. Yeah. So we're gonna talk about a couple alien races in Star Trek. I've got a few picked out. And we'll have a lively discussion, and then I think we'll vote Jewish or not Jewish.
Wait, I have a question, because you have a list there.
Yes.
And RDY has no idea what exists within the Star Trek universe, so he doesn't count for this question. But he might know some. Can we guess some that are on your list and use that as the jumping point?
Sure.
Because I have some guesses. Miriam's raising her hand.
I just want to jump in and ask a quick question because listeners might know, but I don't. Barak and RDY, have you watched any Star Trek?
I'll let RDY go first. It'll be shorter.
I started watching The Next Generation recently, and I am halfway through the first episode where I have been for 2 months.
Oh,
That's so disappointing. Oh.
You need better instruction.
Oh,
also
an ultimatum.
I've seen the movies also.
The new movies or the classic movies?
I have seen all of the movies except Star Trek, the motion picture.
Except the first one. Okay. Ethan, you have your work cut out for you.
Yeah,
it's your responsibility.
Listen, there have been episodes where they talked about all these other things, and there was a great joke after
you
like 20 minutes.
You can't even name them.
After 20 minutes, I spoke up, and they went, oh, Ethan came back.
My background, I was raised in a Trekkie household. My dad only had the Sci-Fi channel. It was either Sci-Fi or Comedy Central were the only two channels that were on. And he was a huge Star Trek fan. And so I've seen most of all of the original series in either straight run or rerun versions. I've seen all the new ones. I've seen most of the original runs of the movies. And yeah. And I've even debated on going to some Ren fairs dressed in Star Trek garb. So I'm at that level, but I equally love Star Trek and Star Wars. So I'm one of those complicated people, but
I'm going to just play devil's advocate for just a moment and say, yeah, I have never understood why people are pitted against each other in this dichotomy. They have absolutely nothing to do with one another and they don't contradict one another.
They're so such different shows.
It's not DC Marvel, you know?
It's
so far from that. It's like saying, oh, I don't, I don't like Philip Roth because I like Martin Buber. Like, it just makes no sense whatsoever. They're different. They're the same general, but so different.
Yeah.
You can love both. Great. I love both.
Thank you.
You have my permission.
Okay. So do I. And I'll round this up by saying I've seen it all.
I haven't seen the newest shows, and I was talking to my dad recently and I told him I haven't seen the new shows, and he didn't get upset, but he sort of said, Brock, you really have to at least watch Strange New Worlds and what's the other new one? That's Strange New Worlds,
Prodigy, Lower Decks
and
Discovery,
Lower Decks.
Picard,
yeah,
and Lower Decks, the
presumably
reality
upcoming Seven of Nine but series.
What, really?
I mean, it's probably.
I'm just going to go ahead and put this on the table. As RDY, I said to you, you should have had an ultimatum. So when I became engaged to my husband, he had never watched any Star Trek. And it was part of our agreement that he would watch all of them starting at the beginning. I wanted him to watch it in ideological chronological order. So starting with Enterprise, he wanted to watch it in the order it was released. We have been married for 6 years as of a few days ago. And now we are nearing the end of the fifth season of Voyager. So we've almost made it to Enterprise. To be fair, we had two kids. I wrote a book. I got a PhD. A lot has happened to take us away from our Star Trek Enterprise. Star Trek Enterprise. unintentional, actually.
Ethan is laughing so hard at that joke.
I don't want to let it go to not say happy anniversary.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. We ate spaghetti. It was delightful. that's just, parents of young ones get
I will say, I know not everybody on this podcast has seen all the new stuff in the grand tradition of Star Trek. Some of it is terrible and some of it is absolutely incredible. So I will say, for the purposes of this conversation, we're going to really be anchoring ourselves on the, like, what I call the first golden age of Star Trek, Next Generation, Deep Space Nine, Voyager. Maybe you can squint and include Enterprise.
Great.
I like that. That's good. I'll concluding my little story, just saying, I promised him in return that I wouldn't watch the new ones without him. So I have watched none of them because we're only up. It pains me. Every time I see an ad go by, I have to, shield my eyes. So I'm with you on not having watched the new ones, but I'm being very excited about them, especially as a Buffy fan. And I know there's a musical episode out now. So Strange New Worlds.
So good.
I know. I want to watch it so badly. I want to just skip ahead five series and watch that episode. Which
I was lucky enough. My wife is also a Trek fan. She was also raised in a Trekkie household. So she'll, like, in the background of while she works, she'll have on like Voyager reruns. And so, yeah.
Excellent. I mean, Voyager. Oof, I am suffering through Voyager, but it's the worst of all.
Even though you're excited for the Seven of Nine series?
Yeah, Seven of Nine is by far the best part of Voyager. I mean, that show was just plummeting down a well. Oh. And she pulled it up all by herself. I mean, there's so few great actors at that show, and she came in and just like really shines. Yeah, she's great. I'm excited for that potential series. I'm excited for absolutely any new Trek always. I'm one of the only people I know who wasn't resentful of anything that came on screen in the remake movies or, I mean, you know, and shifting canon is shifting canon, right? Like if they're retconning, like I'm all for it. Let's do it. Let's see what comes of it. And you just have to like,
Jews have never done that before. So that's fine.
Retcon. Perfect. Yeah.
So this is great. You and I are of a very similar perspective where it's like, great. Am I getting new Star Trek? Happy to have it.
I know.
Yeah. As of this recording, there has not been an official announcement of the Seven of Nine show. And I'm willing to bet a lot of money in the next 2 years that will be a reality, though.
Can I ask a question about Below Decks?
Lower Decks?
Is that the one? So it's not the reality show?
It's not the reality show. Although it is similar and it is a show that is centered on the lowest ranking ensigns on the ship. So it's a very different perspective.
Yes, you may well have been speaking Ferengi to me.
And speaking of Ferengi, Barak, who do you guess we're going to... What alien species do you think we're going to talk about?
I brought it back.
Yeah, way to bring it back. But that was a good tangent, not one of those sports ball tangents that you've taken us on. So I appreciated it. I was going to start with the original Jewish appearance on Star Trek, which will be the Vulcans.
Ooh.
With their priestly blessing hand sign. So that is a guess for me. I don't know any, aside from Leonard Nimoy's stories, which I'm happy for us to share because who knows if RDY's sister Susan knows about that or not, but I'm happy for somebody to share the origin of Leonard Nimoy bringing in the Vulcan symbol.
Sure. At least the lore says, you know, that simply they wanted him to have some kind of greeting that was not human. And I'm going to say this a lot probably when we get to talk about all the different species, people tend to bring in what they know. And he said, oh, well, I know how to do this, you know, and that became the greeting.
Yeah, he said that he remembered. Oh, go ahead, Artie Way.
This is like the one thing I've heard before because... Because I actually went to hear Leonard Nimoy speak and he pretty much said that and just added to it is that he knew that it was something kind of mystical from his experiences going to shul.
Yeah, that he was like tucked under his dad's tallit and remembers looking out where you're not supposed to look out at that sign at the rabbis up at the front. And he found it to be so powerful. Yeah.
Have I told you what happened to me with that sign?
No.
So I had an uncle who went to conservative shul. I grew up in the reform movement and he took me and he said, when they were all covering their eyes with the tallitot, he said, don't look when the priest is blessing, because if you look once, you'll go blind. And if you look twice, you'll die. And I said, Uncle Irv, how can I look twice if I'm blind? He said,
what age was this? Well, that's actually very clever for a like pre-bar mitzvah age kid, I think. When someone told me that if I cut off my big toe, I would walk in circles for the rest of my life, I just thoughtlessly believed them until my 20s. When I injured my toe and thought, thank goodness I did. Oh, wait, that makes no sense.
All right, friends. The question has been brought up. Vulcans, Jewish or not Jewish? As we have clearly talked about, there are some real-life Jewish connections. Leonard Nimoy, the first Vulcan Jewish actor, used his real-life experience as a Jew to create the Vulcan salute based off of the shin symbol from the priestly benediction. But Vulcans, green-blooded, society based on purging all emotion, are they Jewish?
Pointy ears.
Pointy ears, yes.
I was going to say, if you're going to bring up the blood.
Yeah.
We have to bring up intriguing eyebrows.
Mm-hmm.
Also, arguably Jewish. If we're going to start with the shallow stuff. Personally, do I just dive in?
Yes.
Yeah. What is your thought? What do you think?
So I have heard many an argument about all of these species that we're going to discuss, I'm sure. Vulcan is the one that everyone seems to kind of take as a given because it is known how Jewish the origin was. Hmm. But I think every series we talked, I know we're trying to stay loosely in the first golden age. So I'm going to push outside of it a little bit, just like you said, and go straight to Enterprise. And I am one of those odd Star Trek fans who loves Enterprise. And one of the reasons that I love Enterprise is each of these series, the good ones, arguably, teaches you a lot about a species, whether it's a new species or a species that you knew but you didn't really know, like DS9, it's the Ferengi, and Enterprise, it's the Vulcans. It's really the Vulcans. It's also the Andorians, which we just really don't get to enough in any other series. But in Enterprise, there's so much focus on the human-Vulcan relationship, and the Vulcans in that series are this kind of parental figure, because Enterprise is all about our first human, this is pre-Federation, right? So it's our first warp speed travel out into space as explorers. And we are accompanied by the Vulcans as like the big brother, because they had their prime directive, not called that. And as soon as we attained warp, they came to us and said, oh, now that you've attained warp speed, you're going to meet some aliens. So we're going to be the first. So they were the learned elders, arguably. Yeah. Yes, they purged themselves of emotion visually, but you learn, especially in Enterprise, the more you learn about the Vulcans, the reason that they suppress their emotion through meditation is that they're highly emotionally volatile. They're full of emotion. They have so much emotion that it's like too much for their society. But one of the things in Enterprise is that they are, although they are highly emotional, this like learning to suppress it, it's not a constant, it's not a permanent, right? It's like a trend in practice because they're always renegotiating.
Well, and there's a ritual to the suppression of emotions.
Absolutely. You go and you purge, you go to monastery kind of environments and you meditate, you light candles, you, I don't know, drink really bland broth, because apparently, yes. And they're all vegetarians, which is something I always found interesting. I was raised a vegetarian, and until I was like 8, I thought all Jews were vegetarians. Not the case, as I learned from Passover at my grandmother's house, where there was just Cornish hens everywhere. I was like totally traumatized the first time.
So is the ritual, Kolinar, is the ritual of purging emotions, is that the Vulcan bar mitzvah?
RDY, resident rabbi.
I don't know what you're talking about, so I can't answer. But I do have questions about a couple of the things that Dr. Miri just said. The first one being about how it's canon that Vulcans are Jewish because it originated in Judaism. Does that make all Christians Jewish?
According to some.
Okay, I disagree. But also, I have it in my head that Spock is half Vulcan. Is that correct?
Yes,
that's correct.
So I am of the philosophical belief that one cannot be half Jewish because Judaism is a religion and Vulcanism, volcanic tendencies, it is a species.
So I'm going to deviate slightly, and I am going to, minor spoiler, I'm going to quote a character from Strange New Worlds who talks to Spock, and this is one of the greatest things I'd ever thought of. And this character says to Spock, "I urge you to consider that you do not need to be either Vulcan or human. That is and always has been a false choice. The question isn't what you are, it's who you are." And this character reframes Spock's struggles of being part human and part Vulcan and basically says, don't try and be both. Just be you.
Show sounds so good. Strange New Worlds. I would add on, kind of jumping off what RDY said, I think one of the great things about Star Trek and the reason that this is a constant discussion, which, you know, who are the space Jews in Star Trek, is that they have the opportunity to make species that are not human-like. And they really rarely do, right? There's like this whole arc in Enterprise with the Zindi, and some of them are like, some of them are aquatic and some of them are like primates, but some of them are like insects. they do that so rarely that like a big blob shows up, right? It's like usually very humanoid. And the reason for that is that they're all representing different types of humanity. So I think saying like, you know, Vulcan is a species and Judaism is a religion, I feel like everyone who's part of the Federation, everyone who encounters the Federation joins.
Clarify for RDY. You're not talking about the Jewish Federation. You're talking.
I am not. Okay. I am not. Way more funding because there's no money in the future. I'm talking about the Federation of United Planets. Is that right, Ethan? Is that what I think it's the Federation?
The United Federation of Planets. Thank yes.
You. Yeah. And anyone who encounters the Federation and spends time on one of the ships, if they're at all a character, they're going to do the same thing that Spock does. Right. And they're going to say, like, what is my identity? What is my place? And they have this struggle because it's about Star Trek is all about diversity and overcoming adversity and all of these things. And so everyone kind of struggles with this. I think that some of them, like the intermarriage question with Spock, which seems to me very much an intermarriage question more than an ethnic question. It's about like chosen identity. And I think it's the same thing even for the species that, like, Worf. We're going to talk about Worf. Sorry, I'm jumping species now, Ethan. But Worf is, you know, pure Klingon. He's not half human, but he was an orphan raised by humans. So he struggles with his identity, I would argue, more than anyone else in his first series, The Next Generation. I feel like it's about that.
I feel like you cheated and you read my notes for this episode.
Wait, before we jump to the next species, can we just do a round the room Jewish, not Jewish Vulcan?
Yeah.
RDY looked like he's so confused. I'm going to say Jewish.
I abstain.
Boo.
What do you think?
That's how Bush won Florida in 2000.
I vote for Gore.
Then you should wait for the Klingons if that's what you're waiting for.
Oh, that was good.
Thank you.
I'm going to vote no.
No, not Jewish. Okay.
Not Jewish.
I'm going to vote no because Ethan is always right about Star Wars.
I think that's one of the best compliments I've ever received, to be honest.
I'm going to vote yes.
All right. Looks like we're split down the middle.
But we're going to come back to this at the end to explain our answers, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, I'd like to jump us over to the chapter that Miriam just wrote, talking about the Ferengi, which I think is probably, I would say, like, outside of the Vulcans, maybe, the one that you think of when you talk about Judaism. So the Ferengi were introduced in Star Trek The Next Generation, and they're supposed to be the new kind of big bad guys to replace the Klingons, who were the go-to villains from the original Star Trek. So Gene Roddenberry wanted to show a hopeful future. And so in his vision, by the time Star Trek The Next Generation rolls around, not only had humanity and Klingons kind of ended their conflict, but they became staunch allies of each other. So in comes this new species, the Ferengi. And wouldn't you know it, they have big ears, big noses, razor sharp teeth, and they're introduced in The Next Generation. And their introduction crashes and burns. Like, no one takes them seriously. They're like, what is this? And so they're quickly shelved as being the big bad guys of The Next Generation. And so they make a few sporadic appearances throughout the show's run. But in Deep Space Nine, the Ferengi get a new life, and they are heavily, heavily featured in the series. So Quark, who is a Ferengi, he was a member of the main cast. And there are several other Ferengi, some related to Quark, some not, who make up the ensemble of many, many reoccurring characters throughout the 7 seasons of Deep Space Nine. And so while they were introduced to Next Generation, the Ferengi who Miriam and Barak and I know and love really well, their culture comes from Deep Space Nine. So Miriam.
Sorry, just to clarify, as far as seasons go, there are 7 of 9.
Yes, actually. That was really good. All right, Miriam, it is literally in your bio. You wrote about the Jewishness of the Ferengi in Star Trek.
Yeah, I have a lot to say about this. So I think I'm going to jump on one thing you said and just immediately add to it, which was your description of when they popped into the series, right? Which was in the first few episodes of The Next Generation. Like you said, this big introduction, they're supposed to be the new big bad. And I'm going to plug in two different additions to that statement. One, you said this is supposed to be this, you know, kind of utopian future. So we've made peace with the Klingons, right? And they get that off the bat in the first episode by saying, hey, there's a Klingon on our bridge, right? Worf, chief security officer. Well, not yet, but, you know, he was there. And Lieutenant Worf at that point. So the other utopian aspect of this that they've gotten past is money. There is no money in the Federation. Money is a thing of the past. They have replicators now. They don't need money. So there is no capitalism. So when Roddenberry is thinking about what this new species that's supposed to be the bad guy is going to be, he goes to capitalism, which is how we fall into this pit that we'll get to. The other thing I'll add is it's not just that the Ferengi have, you know, big ears and big noses. They're also really short. They're unusually cunning and intellectual. They have distinctive head coverings that they wear. They have visibly large brains to kind of like visualize their intelligence. They have small beady eyes, which is emphasized by the enormous heads, darker orange skin, oversized and sharpened teeth, and blue fingernails. And I mention all those things because, believe it or not, they're all relevant in talking about historical anti-Semitism, even the fingernails. Although I don't think that's all intentional. But that's how they come into the series, right? As these capitalist, greedy villains that are supposed to be very scary with all of these physical distinctive characteristics that are oddly reminiscent of anti-Semitic caricature.
So you went right there. So I'm going to build off of your building off. And their society is built on greed and profit. Their society is extremely patriarchal. Women are not allowed to earn profit or travel. They're not taught how to read. Mm-hmm. Marriage was referred to as a business contract. Their heaven is the divine treasury, and their hell is the vault of eternal destitution.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there is so much to be said about Ferengi culture and how fascinating and fun it is. But if you're going to jump into that, into the way their society is built, not only is their culture based on greed, and they're extremely patriarchal, and they have all these kind of appalling characteristics, but they're also an entirely legalistic society. So they have what they call the rules of acquisition, which are their very rigid code of behavior. And they have a number of rules, which I have here, and I'm writing at this exact moment. But it's not 613. It's more.
Do they ignore as many as we do?
No. So this is one of the amazing things about them. Anyway, they have this wealth of rules called the rules of acquisition, which they live by, which were written by their first Negus, which is their leader. A lot of this is very, you know, on the surface, it's very Jewish. And that people are like, oh, it's this legalistic society and they obey all these rules and they form their whole lives around them. But the rules themselves are actually very anti-Jewish, which leads me to my kind of second part, which is, yes, they are an anti-Semitic caricature in the beginning. They're built this way for, I think, largely unintentional reasons that have to do with, you know, kind of falling into easy stereotyping and pitfalls. But then they kind of work to be intentionally more Jewish in redeeming ways, which is why, like, the article, the chapter that you mentioned, Ethan, that I wrote was, it's called A Case for Ferenginar, Redeeming Star Trek's Worst Jewish Archetypes. Because they were, it is insulting. You watch it and it is terrible. You know, they weren't very Jewish when they were anti-Semitic archetypes. And then in Deep Space Nine, with almost entirely Jewish showrunners like Ira Baer, whether intentionally or not, they recovered this species, right? They made them part of the regular recurring cast, as you say, but also they gave them a lot of really incredible arcs. You mentioned they're being very patriarchal and sexist and misogynist. They are, but they're the only species we see a full-on feminist revolution.
Yes.
Led by a woman, Ishka, who's the mother of Quark and Nog, the two main Ferengi on the deep space station. And she's played by, at first, Andrea Martin, who's not Jewish, but who everyone thinks is Jewish. And she says that herself. She's like, no one ever asked me, but everyone thinks I'm Jewish. I'm actually Armenian, but everyone gets us confused, right? And then she was replaced by another actress who is Jewish and friends with Armin Shimerman, who plays Quark. So, I mean, almost that's the other kind of damning evidence, is that almost every actor to play a Ferengi is Jewish. But they have this feminist revolution. They create a Marxist revolution, founding a union and leading a worker strike, which is the least kind of capitalist thing you can imagine. And they do this. They also become war heroes. They redeem themselves in so many ways that no other species in this entire Star Trek realm has the opportunity to do.
I'm so glad you brought this up, Miriam, because you are 100% correct, almost as if you studied this so you could write your chapter. But you're so right. The Ferengi, while being very capitalist, we see a revolution on Fereginar, and it's not a revolution of bombs or swords or phasers, but it is a cultural revolution. There is the episode where Rom leads the worker strike, which is like the worst possible thing you could ever do as a Ferengi. And then you have Nog, who becomes the first Ferengi to join Starfleet and to say, actually, my purpose in life is not to go after the acquisition of wealth. It's to explore the universe.
And he does so in, I would add, like the most Jewish way imaginable. He says he goes to Captain Sisko's office.
Yeah.
And he pretty much brings his bar mitzvah money, right? I mean, they don't actually say this, but what happens is Nog comes into his office. He puts this big bag of money on the counter and he says, yesterday I completed the Ferengi attainment ceremony. He says, I'm an adult. And he brings this money in to bribe the captain, as is tradition in Ferengi society, to give him an apprenticeship so he can start learning the ropes at Starfleet, because he wants to be the first Ferengi in Starfleet. And he does this like with his bar mitzvah latinum, right? Like, I love that. It's like they're really leaning into it by this point. And it's great because he invests, right? He invests in his future in this incredibly, you know, I wouldn't say Jewish way, because buying your way into something isn't, of course, Jewish. But this moment of like, I'm an adult and now I get to pick my profession and I get to really like, I'm very proud of myself for having achieved this milestone in my society. And I don't know, I thought it was really wonderful. And yeah. Not only is he the first one in Starfleet, but he becomes a real hero. And yeah. He's scared. He's like very vulnerable. You know, he joins and then they're at war, which is one of the things that Star Trek very rarely follows through on, I think, is they promise these amazing conflicts. And, you know, introduce new species that are supposed to be very scary, but they rarely actually engage in this much battle. But Nog is seen, he's scared, he overcomes his fear, he does his duty, he's a patriot, right? Which is also bashing anti-Semitic stereotypes of Jews in the military having dual loyalties and not being good soldiers and being physically weak and unable. He's, you know, he kind of pushes through all of this, which is pretty remarkable.
So do you think,
of him as Jewish.
Do you think, because I also agreed that I think the Ferengi were a very anti-Semitic seeming species. Do you think that the showrunners caught this or were made aware and then decided to shift storylines to redeem all of these characters to be way more positive facing? Right. Even I feel like even Quark, who early on, as with most of the Ferengi, right, as you said, very capitalist focused, started to lean away from those tendencies as the series went on and became less concerned with money and more with the people around him. And so do you think that the show made that conscious effort to make that switch then? Like they received a lot of feedback of like, oh yeah, no, those are the Jews. I get how they're bad. And they said, no, stop. They're not bad. Let's like redeem them.
I have my own theory about this. I mean, I'll tell you, when I was writing this chapter, I reached out to Armin Shimerman through his agent and I tried to have a conversation with him. And he was very reticent to talk about Jewishness and the Ferengi, which I do not blame him for. He had said in previous interviews that he felt guilty, like it was partially his fault because he was one of those first, he played one of the first Ferengi in that episode where they were like kind of jumping around and, you know, with their laser whips and being really ridiculous and acting like, you know, manic monkeys kind of thing. What did they call them? Deranged gerbils, I think, is how the director instructed them to act. So he had regretted that. And he said that he like made it his mission to make this a more fuller character and species than they had in the next generation. But I think more than that, I think that the original concept was anti-Semitic because the creators told the designers initially to make them look like Shylock. They were all supposed to have little beards. So I think that there's like, even if that was a little bit unintentional, it gets harder to defend when you know that that note was on their costume design to begin with. But I think past that point, like once it was in Ira Bear's hands, you know, and once they had, I think my guess is, my theory is that they loved Armin Shimerman because he's amazing, because he's a brilliant actor and they wanted to make more of him, which is why they paired him up in this like tense relationship with Odo, which turned out to be one of the best parts of the whole series. Mm. And they both like grow through this relationship. So I think the intention was really to like flesh out this character. But then what they encounter when they start writing Quark is, oh, we have to deal with how horrible his species is, right? And how do we make this maybe a little bit better? And I think that the ways that they decided to do that was to hire great actors. I mean, they have, you know, Wallace Shawn plays the Grand Nagus. Wallace Shawn in Star Trek, it's fantastic. Andrea Martin, you know, from SCTV and everything that Andrea Martin does, she's fantastic. She's one of the bigger names that was on the series. So, I mean, I think that they invested a lot in the species. And I think that whether or not they made it their mission to redeem the Ferengi in a Jewish way, you've got a bunch of showrunners and a bunch of great actors, most of whom are Jewish, trying to flesh out this character. So they found, probably just by a labor of love and by accident, a really Jewish solution to an anti-Semitic problem. Right. They found, okay, this is a really capitalist and sexist society. We're going to have a union movement. We're going to have a feminist movement. This is a society that's very cowardly. We're going to put them in situations where they get to show that they have a different kind of courage that is based on their integrity and their philosophies. And these are all really Jewish solutions, whether they meant them to be or not. But that's where the basis came from. So maybe the anti-Semitism in the beginning is what set them up to have such a Jewish solution.
You know, that was so good, Miriam. My answer going into this conversation was going to be no, that the Ferengi are not Jewish, but you have really helped sway the needle for me. I subscribe to the idea that actually the Ferengi aren't Jewish. They're modern day humanity, and that it's the Starfleet in Deep Space Nine. That's who we want to aspire to be. Like, we see ourselves as that. And it's like, no, that's what we want to be. The Ferengi are us present day. But you've swayed me. My vote is yes.
Yeah, my vote's going to be an unfortunately yes.
RDY?
Yes?
And then I'm Miriam, you're a yes on this one?
I'm absolutely a yes.
Yeah.
I am a yes. Yeah.
So I want to be mindful of the time, but I do want to prompt Miriam for one more round. We did a...
Wait, before you start, if you've got time for one more, can we do one more and then just like speed rounds with the remainder list that you might have left and just like quick yes or no's on those?
Well, we're getting close.
Cool.
Okay. So, Miriam, the Klingons.
The Klingons. So, what I briefly met Ethan before this, that one of the only questions I asked was, are you a member of this Star Trek Jew posting group? Which it's just all Star Trek Jewish memes.
And you would be great, by the way. It's great.
And it's great. Join it. It's fabulous. It is such a fun place. But one of the
things. Wait, what's it called?
Star Trek Jew Posting.
Oh, okay. Very, very creative.
Yeah. I did not come up with that, but I did join. And one of the things that has totally shocked me is the insistence through like meme sharing and conversation piggybacking off of other things that the Klingons are the most Jewish species, or that somehow Klingon memes have like a Jew, or Klingon imagery has like a Jewish base, which that strikes me as bizarre, but there's this insistence on it. The reason that this fascinates me is I know where it comes from originally, that the kind of Klingons are Jewish is from the Worf discussion. Because Worf is raised by the Rashenkos, right? So like a lot of the Klingon Jewish memes you see are about him loving prunes. So like around Purim, there are all these memes of like Worf holding a pruned Hamantaschen, and it says, you know, pruned Hamantaschen, the warrior's cookie, or something like that. Like, you know, prune juice, the drink of a warrior. As though prune juice itself is very Jewish, which it's not, right? Is
it? It's very AK.
What is AK?
Altacocker.
Okay.
There are more Jewish. I mean, some of the parents, you know, are played by famously Jewish actors, and they are pretty clearly Russian Jews. The Russian.
I think the only thing that to me speaks to Klingons being Jewish would be they're like very heavy into the ritual aspect of their culture. And there's a bunch of you're becoming an adult, so you've got to battle till you draw blood. Or there's a lot of ritualistic concepts around. They're based in like battle and fighting, but they're progressing into different aspects of their life. So that's the only piece that I could maybe say, yeah, maybe, but they're so angry.
They are angry. I mean, but arguably, you know, so are the Jewish people in a lot of ways. And one of the things I find interesting about this, so my main work up until now, the book that I'm releasing in a few months, is on Jewish American masculine identity. So a lot of what I study is Jewish gender and Jewish masculinity and acculturation. And one of the things that I've noticed is that the people who are posting all of these like, yeah, Klingons are Jews memes, they're men. They're largely men who are excited about this kind of connection to a more ferocious sort of culture, which is a trend that has been kind of trending upward since the early 2000s, right? Like with the release of Inglourious Bastards and the kind of idolizing of the bear Jew and this sort of thing. So, I mean, I think there's some of that in there too, because this argument that Klingons are Jewish, the first translation of the Haggadah into Klingon was not until like the last decade.
Oh, well then clearly, yeah.
That's probably why I'm not like a violent, fighting, angry person. I'm a very more caring, in touch with my feelings type of Jew, I guess, person. And so that's why to me, as my identity does not speak to this violence, but the Torah would tell me different.
Well, and also it's not about who you are. It's about who you aspire to be. So when you're looking at Star Trek and you're saying, which species am I? You're right. Not saying, well, I do look more like Nog, you know, than I do like Bashir or something, right? Mm. You're saying, who do I want to be? Which species do I really like feel that connection to? And I think that's the argument largely. I mean, I think Worf is in many ways a very Jewish character. Like I said at the beginning, I think he grapples with his identity and with, you know, his chosen ascriptive identity versus his ethnicity. Or I guess this is actually a place where you could say race and it would be accurate. But yeah, that's because he was raised by adoptive Jewish parents. So it doesn't say much about the species itself.
All right. I'm going to be mindful of the time. I'm going to lightning round us. All right. Klingons, yes or no? I say no.
I'm going to say no.
Yes. You're going to say yes?
I did.
Okay, we're gonna ask you to show your work in a minute.
RDY?
I'm going to roll a D20. What do you think? The DC is what, 10?
Yeah. I'd say the DC would be 18.
Either way, I lose. So
okay.
No?
No. Okay.
Worf. I say yes.
Oh, wait. Isn't Worf Klingon?
Yes.
Oh, I see.
He's his own species, according to this poll.
I'm going to still say no.
I'm going to say Worf is a superhero because he's an orphan.
Miriam?
Yes.
Okay. The Bajorans? No.
Aren't those things you carry your baby in?
This next segment is going to have no context for RDY. It's going to be, this is a humiliating thing to admit. When somebody asks me which football team is going to win, I ask, okay, who's going to play? And I imagine those two creatures fighting it out, like the Eagles versus the Giants. Which of those would battle each other? That's exactly how RDY is going to do this next selection of Star Trek Jew or not Jew.
So my work does an annual March Madness bracket, and my first year I picked based on which mascot would win in a fight.
Yeah, that's exactly how I choose the who's gonna win in a football game.
All right,
so who are Bajorans? The mascots for Bjork?
Nana Vister. Wait, I say
is Nana Vister the next species?
No, there are Star Trek fans ripping their hair out right now listening to this, and I'm so sorry.
I'm so sorry.
The whole time they're like, RDY was quiet and it was a beautiful episode. And then we get to the lightning round and he opens his mouth.
Why is it that when I'm quiet, it's a beautiful episode? That hurts.
Oh my God. This is, I can't, my eyes are tearing. Okay.
Okay. Maybe just me, Miriam, and Barack.
It's fine.
Bajorans. I say no.
I'm going to say no. They feel more like European, which is,
I'm going to say yes, religion, because Jews do carry their babies.
Okay.
Thank you.
I'm with RDY.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Cardassians. No.
Kim, yes. Chloe, no.
Oh, man.
Okay. I'm going to say no.
I am sadly going to say yes.
All right. That's, I'm shutting it down. Rejecting the warp core. We're done. All right, Miriam, I would love to hear a little bit about why the answer is yes to everything.
Well, I'm tempted to give you a very Star Trek answer and just say that for each question, I remodulated the frequencies and set things out on a different wavelength. But
you ran a level 3 diagnostic, yes.
Yeah, and then I modulated the frequencies to avoid whatever. No, I think the real answer is that the series itself is so Jewish in so many ways, and that every species represents, in many ways, a part of Jewish culture. So I say yes to Bajor because they are an oppressed people, because they are, you know, forced to stop practicing their religion, because they've had their relics stolen, because they have a lot of these shared experiences, but that is not the whole of Jewish culture. I would say yes to Cardassia, because even though I hate to say it, and, you know, we hate to talk about it and think it, there's an oppression of a people, you know, in an occupied territory. So, I mean, certainly Cardassians behave terribly and they're a genocidal people in many ways, but they don't actually set out for genocide. They're an invader. So in some ways, yes to that as well. I say yes to the Klingons because in many ways, they're an aspirational Jewish type. And I say yes to the Ferengi for all the reasons I put out. And I say yes to the Vulcans because of their foundation and because of their intellectual leadership and long history and philosophical excellence.
Where do you stand on the humans in Star Trek?
The humans are the most Jewish of all. In some ways they are, because they are the species that we are seeing in their own diaspora. Mm. They're especially series where parts of the planet have been destroyed, but you know, they are scattered to the winds of their own volition, but they're wandering the stars
for 40 or more years.
In the case of Voyager, they're stuck for, what is it, 78, 87, something like that. So many, many years in the desert of the Delta Quadrant. Yeah. So I think that there's a good argument for the humans being the most. They're out there interacting with everybody and learning from everybody. And that's a big part of Jewish history as well.
That was amazing.
Miriam, thank you so very much for joining. I had a lot of fun. I won't speak for RDY. But this was great. This is all of the thoughts I've had. And so it was great to have a nerdy outlet. So thank you. Before we go, is there anything you would like to plug or talk about, shout outs that you have? RDY is holding up a finger.
Can I just jump in and say that this has been enjoyable for me, because if you only talk about stuff you already know about, you can't learn anything. And there's nothing more Jewish than a desire to learn. So thank you so much for teaching me.
Oh, that was beautiful.
That was very
thank
Jewish.
You. This has been, I ditto to everything you said, Ethan. This has been such a pleasure. And so many things that I just love to talk about that no one else in the world would have given me a full hour to chat with them about. So thank you for that. I will put in a couple of little plugs, if that's all right. My book, Carrying a Big Shtick, Jewish American Masculinity and Acculturation in the 20th Century, is releasing on May 21st through Wayne State University Press. And I'm very excited that that'll be out in the world. It deals with pop culture, but not very heavily. It's supposed to provide a historical groundwork to make these arguments and to talk about Jewish gender in pop culture and, you know, all that sort of thing. And the other plug I'd like to put in is for Juice, the Jewish Comics Experience, which is a Jewish comic con, a Jewish comics convention, comics and pop culture taking place at the Center for Jewish History this November. There's going to be a full day of panels and workshops with amazing talent. You can go see it all at the website, which is jewce.org. Tickets are available for sale, including the preview night, which is going to have an award ceremony for excellence in Jewish comics and Jewish content. And we're also opening the exhibit that you mentioned at the beginning. The exhibit's going to open October 6th at the Center for Jewish History. It's going to have some amazing stuff, 5 micro exhibits on different topics of Jewish comics history, including a display of all 5 issues of the original Siegel and Schuster mimeographed zine that they made when they were in high school in 1933. So hand-drawn, all of it, really incredible stuff, including the first mention of Superman and the reign of Superman. And that's all going to be on display and available to read digitized. So it's really an amazing experience worth coming and seeing. And there's an immersive laboratory where you get to make your own comics, dress up, be in your own comic covers, all kinds of great, fun stuff. So I urge everybody to come and visit and enjoy, because it's a really wonderful project.
RDY, are you going to come out to the East Coast and join me for that?
I mean, this is a really good sell.
Yeah, not only is Juice, our listeners have heard them on the past couple of episodes now, it's a supporter of Torah Smash, but Torah Smash is also a proud sponsor of Juice. So happy for this partnership. It's great.
For us too. Yeah. It's symbiotic and it just lines up perfectly. Yeah. So we're delighted to be contacted and to be partners.
Awesome. Well, this was super fun. And that'll do it for this episode of Torah Smash. Our fiscal sponsor is Jewish Creativity International. Our theme music was created by Sean Fogel. You can check out Sean's bands and studio work at www.thesleepywest.com. This episode was supported in part by Juice. Juice, which stands for the Jewish Comics Experience, is a full-day convention and preview night that brings together fans, creators, and industry professionals to explore the rich history and contributions of diverse Jewish creators and content in the comics medium. Juice is created and hosted by the Center for Jewish History in New York City. If you are interested in attending or to learn more, visit juice.org. That's jewce.org. Also, visit the Center for Jewish History at cjh.org for new information on the institution and their partners, who are all involved in the upcoming exhibit, the Museum and Laboratory of the Jewish Comics Experience, opening in October 2023 at the Center for Jewish History. If you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to rate and review us wherever you listen. It helps others find us and is an excellent way to support the podcast. We want to hear from you and continue today's nerdy discussion. Go to torahsmash.com to find where to connect with us online, purchase swag from our store, support us with a donation, find previous episodes, and more. And as our Vulcan fans will often say, holding up the salute of their people, live long and podcast.
Captain, the hailing frequencies are disrupted.
That sounds like William Shatner.
It was.
Perfect.
That's got to be the end credits.
That's in the episode. Are you kidding?
It's inevitable.